I like, you know, sometimes I like to start messing with bells and whistles because I love music. I guess in another life I probably should have been a DJ. But hello, everyone. This is Tawanda with Take 411. And I am joined by the lovely Anita all the way from the great state of, you know what, Anita, you travel so much. I can't ever remember where you are.
I know.
What state are
I'm
you
in
today?
Iowa right now.
Iowa.
Well, okay.
All right. Well, we're super excited to be here today with Take 411, and we're even more excited about the guests that we have on here. We definitely want to just continue to share a lot of information, a lot of resources to be able to help people. And I met this guy a few weeks ago, and when he emailed me his story and different things he had going on, different things he had been through, I said, wow. You are definitely someone we want to talk to. So without further ado, I want to introduce Bobby. I don't want to mess your name up. Bobby Hedlund Taylor. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Hedlund like hedges. So Hedlund. Don't worry about it. Hedlund is don't worry about it. No, people, it's a normal mistake, just the way it's spelled, just the way it comes out. So it's all good. I don't take offense to
it. All right. Well,
thank
you
for
not taking the fence because I definitely didn't mean it. Absolutely. Well, Bobby, thank you. Welcome to the show, first and foremost. Hopefully you're having an awesome day.
I did, actually.
Awesome.
I got to see a friend for the first time in 2 years. So, and
oh,
I actually ate at a restaurant for the first time in over a year. so it was actually new.
You know how people say, you know, we have to – stop and smell the roses. You just said, and I know you said you're in New York. Today you ate at a restaurant for the first time in a year, and that's huge because we've been through a lot over the last year. So now getting able to be able to come out a little more and do different things, and it also shows, I know you guys think the same way or similar, you know, sometimes we take things for granted, but when you can't do that stuff, you have a whole nother level of appreciation. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you. It was the first time I walked outside without a mask, and it was the first time I went to a restaurant, and I got to see a friend that I haven't seen in 2 years, and that was really healing, and, you know, things that, you know, you see the flowers are blooming, and spring is coming, and the weather's changing, and then seeing a lot of people in the streets, so it's there's a lot of hope in the air, which I'm all about right now, so...
Absolutely. And hope is definitely something that we need. You know, without further ado, Bobby, I know our listeners are going to be asking, who in the world does Tawanda and Anita have on the show today? So can you tell our listeners a little bit about who is Bobby? I'm not going to even mess with the rest of your name right now. I don't want to butcher it. But tell us a little about who you are, where you're from, or anything you're open to sharing about yourself.
Sure. Well, so I was born and raised in Pennsylvania on a mountaintop, and I'm from an Italian family. Excuse me. Sorry, I had to drink a little water there. I had a little frog in the throat. And I was on a podcast interview recently, and somebody called me the multi-hyphenated artist because I've been a trapeze artist, I've been an actor, I've been a dancer, I've been a singer, I've been an acrobat, an impressionist. An officiant, I'm a wedding officiant. So if anybody out there wants to get married, just, you know, thank you, internet. I design aerial sequences for Broadway shows. I was a bartender. I was a teacher. I was a coach. And now I'm an author, thanks to our horrendous pandemic that we went through. To just give you a little bit of the background on, I live in New York City, and I live in Queens, New York, which was the epicenter for the outbreak of the pandemic. So on March 11th, they shut down visitations to nursing homes. And my mom was in a nursing home for 5 years. And so that, the last day I saw her was March 10th. And she died 11 days later. And even though we didn't have COVID tests then, we're pretty sure with the way that her symptoms were that she died of COVID. And we're almost positive because the next day I woke up with a 104 fever and I had COVID. Excuse me, one second. Sorry about that. So I started to write, and I didn't have access to therapy. So I started to write, and I used pen and paper, and I started to remember my mom. And so in remembering my mom being Italian and being raised on a mountaintop in Pennsylvania, I was taken back to my childhood by remembering my mom. And so I wrote a cookbook. I wrote all of her stories and her cook and all the family recipes from living on that mountaintop in Pennsylvania. And little history on that mountaintop. My grandfather and my great-grandfather found a plot of land on the top of a mountain in Pennsylvania, and my great-grandfather had 13 children. So those 13 children settled around him on the top of that mountain. So we were this one big unit of family on one hill. So it got the nickname Ravioli Mountain, which at the time was a derogatory because we were all Italian and we were all related and we live on this mountain, and it was a crazy place to live. But I took it another step further because my memories took me back to that mountain, and there were a lot of good times. There were a lot of good times. And so I started to write stories. I wrote stories about my first words. I wrote stories about we used to have a trained pig named Lucky, who used to come in and sleep by the fireplace before I was born, of course. That was my grandmother's story. And then, you know, just the everyday inner workings of a crazy, dysfunctional Italian family. And so I started to write, and it was my way of keeping my mom close. My mom and I were very close, and so the last 5 years of her life, she was in a nursing home. And I would visit her about 3 to 5 times a week, sometimes every day, sometimes twice a day, and she was my buddy. She was my best friend. So I wanted to immortalize her. I didn't want to just put a gravestone on it. I wanted people to know who she was. And so I started posting on the internet using social media hashtag shit my mama says. And so it would make people laugh because my mother's message was always, you've got to laugh every day no matter what. Otherwise, your life will be miserable. And so it was her like safety mechanism so that she could keep her brain sane during sad and stressful times. She knew how to make people laugh, and she definitely kept the nurses' staff very entertained in the nursing home. So I would share her with my friends by the little hashtag shit my mama says. And her little daily, whatever the Mary Lou-ism of the day, my mom's name was Mary Lou. So whatever the Mary Lou-ism of the day was, I would post on Facebook, and people like, your mom sounds like a trip. I can't wait to meet her. And then after she passed, over 500 people sent me messages, cards, emails, texts, and saying, I felt like I knew your mom. Thank you for sharing her with us. And I said, you did know her because that's who she was. That was exactly what she was like. That was her sense of humor, her warped sense of humor. And it brought her to a whole different level to other people because, you know, if you've ever watched The Golden Girls, everybody's seen Sophia Petrillo, the old lady. She always had the quick one-liners. Well, that was my mom. And people can relate to that. And that was her message, and that was what gave me closure. It also made her closer to me during a time when we had no real support from anybody. Everybody was scared. We were in lockdown. It was next to impossible to get to the supermarket. And when you did get to the supermarket, you had 30 minutes, and you had to wait in line sometimes 2 hours to get in. Just because they would only let 10 people at a time in the supermarket. And this was a 24-hour thing. It was no matter what time you went, there was always a line. And that was around the time, too, when Mom passed, when all of the funeral homes started to have refrigerator trucks and all of the hospitals had makeshift morgues built on the sidewalk. And refrigerator trucks as well, because people were dying by the hundreds every day in every hospital. And we were terrified. We all have a little bit of PTSD. And we, we got through it, and it's slowly coming back to life. You know, New York is a very resilient place. I've been here since the 80s. I came here to be an actor and dancer and singer, and ended up joining the circus and being a trapeze artist. And here I am still here, and I am grateful that I survived and have a story to tell. And I'm hoping to get hoping to share some fun, delicious recipes from my grandmother's history, as well as my mom's history, and some of the recipes that I made myself that I share with people now. And I cook live on Instagram with friends so that people can see, hey, it's not that hard to make a pizza. It's not that hard to make a very tasty dish. And also I have explored making sure that nobody's dietary restrictions were at odds, so that every recipe that has, say, a meat option, there's always a vegetarian or vegan option to it. So when I was writing, I was thinking of all the people I would invite over to my house, and I was like, oh, my God, she's gluten-free. Oh, my God, she's dairy-free. Oh, my God, he can't have meat. Oh, my God, he only eats fish. And then before you know it, I'm sitting here going, that's what I do whenever I invite people over, so why don't I put it in my book? So that's what I'm doing, and it's almost as if you're – you know, in reading the cookbook, when I'm almost done editing and getting it published. It should be out this summer. But in rereading it, I'm finding that it's just like spending a night over at my house, and I make dinner for everybody who has a different kind of a diet. And nobody will leave hungry, because I will make sure, like my mother always said, if you leave my table hungry, it's your own damn fault. Because she would make food for everybody at any time, and that was just who she was. And I'm proud to be her son. I'm proud to carry on her legacy, and I'm just proud to be that person that wants to give her. It's a form of immortality. It's a, you know, not literally, but it's a form of. This was my mom, and even after I'm gone, this book will be around, and people will pick it up and say, "Who was this? Who is this crazy lady?" And they'll get to learn about me, and they'll learn about my mom, they'll learn about my grandmother, and they'll see, oh, wow, that was a little time capsule in rural Pennsylvania.
It sounds like you can bring in a lot of – it seems like you can bring us a lot of information about different cultures and experiences that you've had, because, like, I don't experience New York City in that time, or Pennsylvania Italian community, and certainly not the circus. So I think you have a lot to bring to us.
Well, thank you.
Let me say this. Let me ask you this really quickly, Donna, because
sure.
The first thing I want to – you a lot, right? And a couple things, I'm so glad now that you email me this information, because I want to point out to our listeners a couple different things. The first thing is, you call yourself the multi-hyphenated artist. That's different.
Yep.
I like
that. Mm-hmm. I like
that.
I just picked it up a couple weeks ago.
But listen, you were a trapeze artist. Like, seriously?
Yep.
Actor, dancer, singer, acrobat. Oh, my gosh. Serial sequence choreographer. Stand-up comic, mixologist, teacher. I mean, this is all in one lifetime.
Yeah, and I'm in my 50s, so I've lived a couple of lifetimes. But being an artist,
okay.
art was always part of my family. My father played guitar. Mm-hmm. My mother loved to sing. My father loved to sing. We were the atypical family that had. We had the adventures on the porch with Dad playing the guitar, and people would just come on over for a beer, and Dad would sing country music, and Mom, of all the art that my mother latched onto in the 1980s, my mother loved rock music. And even when she was in her 80s at the nursing home, she was like, she would ask me, do you still have that Ozzy Osbourne album, or do you have that Journey album? She loved Journey. She loved Kiss. She loved all these rock groups from the 80s, the hair bands. And so I would play them for her on my phone, and she would remember the songs. And I was like, I can't believe that this is my mom. This is the mom that I grew up with. And she's now living, you know, even though my dad loved country music, Mom loved rock music. Here we are sitting in her nursing home, and she is remembering all the words to Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train. So I was sitting here going, you know, somebody's going to pick up on this and somebody's going to laugh. And that's, well, like I said, her message was very clear. And it became clear to me that it was her way of protecting herself. It was like a trigger. It was like a mechanism that she had in the back of her head that when there was sadness, when there was something that made her angry, no matter what it was, she found a way to chuckle. She found a way to laugh, and she found a way to make other people laugh. And me, growing into the artist world, I did some stand-up. I also do some impressions. I've been studying with a local a YouTube star. Her name's Christina Bianco. She's been an amazing coach for me. So when I get a chance to do stand-up, I do singing impressions of different characters. And Christina's been very instrumental in me finding my voice, finding a way to make people laugh. And I found like my own self saying, oh my God, I am definitely my mother's son. I will do anything to get people to laugh because I know that it heals me and it makes me relax. And, you know, doing stand-up is really scary because all stand-up is somebody making observations that are humorous and doing it in a way that really points out the ridiculousness of certain situations. You know, there was very little to be funny about during the pandemic, of course, but I was able to find ways to laugh. And it brought me back to being an artist in Pennsylvania and then going to school for theater, singing, dancing, going to dancing school, going to ballet class and being the only guy in ballet class in Pennsylvania. Now that, you know, that doesn't happen very often. But it is part of who I was as a kid. I always was drawing. I always was painting. I was always making up different stories about things and writing stories, but I was never a writer. And, I always did have something artistic about me. I was able when I was in Boy Scouts, part of my, I did all of the merit badges that involved handicrafts like wood carving, leather working, knot tying and sewing. And I mean, like I lived with my Italian grandmother for a few years in the 1970s. She taught me how to sew. She taught me how to cook and she taught me how to clean. So those things I take with me because I love sewing still to this day. I make fake fur coats, and I make festival coats where people can go to different festivals because they wear these brightly colored coats that light up. So I've make those. That's kind of like my side hobby. I used to try to sell them, but I'm more into, I'm just going to make this for somebody because I love them and I want them to have something exciting and I know they're going to this festival. So I've always been creative. And so being an artist doesn't only mean a paper and a paintbrush. You know, when I worked in theater professionally, after I had my circus career had started going, I started to get people to bring me back into the theater world where I could combine the two, where I could put the circus work into musicals. And I worked on Broadway shows where I taught somebody how to walk a tightrope because I used to walk a tightrope. I taught somebody how to hang on a trapeze 20 feet off the stage. These are people that have never touched the apparatus before, so I got to work with Broadway stars and teach them what I knew as my job. My job was to entertain people in the circus. That is where people notice that, oh my God, you're an artist, but you have so many hyphens to what you could call yourself. And each hyphen is not just, oh, I dabbled in this, I dabbled in that. These are things that I dabbled in and became successful in as well, not only artistically successful, but sometimes monetarily successful. They're all jobs that I've gotten paid for. And so being called the multi-hyphenated artist, in a recent podcast interview, I said, I'm going to use that. I am taking that and I'm going to run with it because that is me. And if there's one thing that I noticed is that when you go through such a journey, especially writing a book, And I, like I said, I'm not a writer, not a chef, and not an editor. So this is my very first chance to just get everything out of my head and onto a page. I knew that I was going to be a different person at the end of it, but I didn't know how it would affect me. But it's affected me in such a positive way that I really am just blown away at what I can do. And I realized that I'm very resilient. I'm a cat. I land on my feet every time. And I will always land on my feet. I'll always be able to find a way to make art and find a way to produce art and find a way to share art of any kind. And being one of the job titles that I do have still to this day is called an aerial and circus sequence designer. So what is that? Oh, my God, a mouthful. But if you've ever been to a Broadway show or even a show that's on the road or in a theater in any town where somebody is flying either by cable or they're on a circus apparatus, I design that for people. I design it for different shows. I always say my motto is with that work, midair is my canvas and the human body is my paintbrush. So I get to turn the page as if somebody was reading this story of Peter Pan or reading this story of this fantastical world that has circus performers in it, or even like the musical version of Tarzan that I did in Louisiana a few years ago. Your visual is Tarzan's life in the air, but as he swings across the stage, is it him getting older? Yes, it's him getting older. That's how we tell the story. So the way that I incorporate that kind of art is the same way that you would design or draw out something. I'm like, what's the story? Tell me the story of Tarzan. Then what is he doing at this point? And this is, oh, you want him to swing from vine to vine as a young boy and then swing off stage, but then he's going to swing back on stage when he's a man. So we're telling the story of Tarzan growing up. And so that's what I do. That's how I manipulate the storyline so that, oh, my God, there's somebody flying in the air, but that's Tarzan growing up. Or there's a circus apparatus that has on a cruise ship that I worked on recently, I put together a piece. It was very touching because my aunt Elsie was in the USO. She was a tap dancer in the USO. And so she was one of the people that I always aspired to be like because I love tap dancing and I love dance. And so knowing that she did it professionally in the USO, I was like, hey, that's my Aunt Elsie. So I'm going to be like my Aunt Elsie. And I designed an act that reminded me about her because her whole life she danced and then she faded into the background because she had Alzheimer's. And so in the aerial choreography, I made it very beautiful where she's in the air with this young man. And then the very last image, she's suspended in the air and she looks like she's floating on his hand. And she's looking off into the sunset. But it's basically like the storyline that the audience doesn't really get was that was my gift to my Aunt Elsie, was this little story that we're telling on a cruise ship to the glory of love, and what I can't remember the song from Ghost, where Unchained Melody was the song. And so I brought the idea of a ghost of my Aunt Elsie going off to heaven. And it was touching, and people really felt, even though they didn't know the story behind it, the audience was affected by it because the movement was emotional. And it was telling them that there's something going on, but we're watching this beautiful aerial ballet. And then when I tell people about it, they get so choked up because it's like, oh, my God, you put so much emphasis and effort into the backstory of your work. And I said, yes, that's what I do. That's what feeds me is being able to be creative and be creative on such a unique scale and something that I never planned. I never planned on joining the circus. I never wanted to join the circus. I came to New York to be an actor. That was it. That's all I wanted. I wanted to dance on Broadway. And literally within 1 month, I got a job in front of a bank dressed as a lion tap dancing on Broadway. But on Broadway meaning the block, not a show on Broadway. So I was like, okay, God has a sense of humor. So I said I want to tap dance on Broadway, but here I am on the sidewalk tap dancing in a lion suit in front of Chase Manhattan Bank for $50 an hour. But within a few months after I graduated from the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, I did get a full scholarship. That's what brought me to New York. Within a few months, a friend had a circus musical, and he said, you'd be perfect for this character. I want you to sing on the recording, because he had heard me sing. He knew who I was. And he said, do you have any circus skills? I was like, no, I don't even juggle. So they found a circus coach, a Ukrainian Olympian who taught trapeze. And she took me under her wing, and they sent me to the coach. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the movement and flying and the freedom that you feel when you're swinging back and forth. And it goes back to Pennsylvania, because when I was a kid, I was always that kid who climbed trees. I was always that kid on a swing set. And I was going higher and higher and higher in the trees. So heights never bothered me. So this freedom, this floating, and then because I was a dancer, I knew how to carry my body in the air. So I had this very elegant way of moving in the air, and that was something that was unheard of. A lot of the men in the circus are very stoic and very masculine, very macho, because the men in the circus were mostly from circus families, and that's what they were taught. But I was trained by somebody who used my dance skill and put it in the air. And so that was really very much part of my aesthetic. And then I started to get work as a trapeze artist in the nightclubs in New York City. And there were only six aerial acrobats at that time. There were five ladies and one man, and I was the only man. And, of course, most of the nightclubs wanted to hire the pretty girl. Fine, I get it, I understand it. So I would have to wait until one of them was out or sick or they weren't able to go on. And then I would get my chance, and then I would get that chance to perform over the dance floor. And it was exhilarating. But then the nightclub scene in the 90s exploded. So I was working every weekend, and I would be able to make my rent in 3 days of just doing trapeze, where I would see my friends who were still actors having to do 5-6 nights a week as a bartender. And I was still bartending as well. So whenever I had a chance to subsidize my income by doing trapeze, I was there. And it really trained me to be connected to an audience in a different way, a nonverbal way, because as an actor, you're talking, you're telling the stories, you're portraying the characters, or you're dancing the movement and you're portraying the mood of the dance. But with trapeze, just you. And it's just you and your, and it's nonverbal communication. So your movement has to say something to the audience. And that was the one thing that was really special about me. And then I just started getting more work as a trapeze artist. Go ahead.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about, Bobby, as you were talking, you know, referencing New York and how long you've been there. And I want to say this real quick before I ask you the next question. And, you know, I can really sit and listen to this all day, because you have so many different, like you said, you lived a couple of different lives. But, you know, I think about New York. There's a song that I love, and it's called I'm not going to try to sing it, but it says New York is a place where dreams are made of. And a lot of times people say, hey, if I can get if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. But absolutely, definitely. So and that's really what you're saying and what you've been doing since the 80s. And I think that's really amazing. I wanted to ask you also, I had posted in one of my podcast groups a couple of weeks ago that I was also doing a segment on grieving and talking about just some different things and how people actually deal with grief. And you had emailed some information and talked about how 2020 was a painful year. And I can just only try to imagine, with you being as busy and as active, when life happens, we know life happens to everyone. Can you share a little bit of the specifics about, and I know you have some questions, Juanita, and we only have like 15 minutes, so let's figure out how we can work it out.
Tell
us a little bit about, oh, no, it's okay, but 2020 was a painful year for you. Can you share what happened in 2020 and how you were able to deal with it?
Well, obviously, the beginning of the pandemic, I lose my mom. And So not only was I grieving for my mom, but the day after she died, I woke up with 104 fever, a headache that I'd never experienced before, and I had COVID. And it hit me really hard. And through the course of the past year, I lost my mom, my aunt, my uncle, and 13 friends. Friends that I've known since high school. Even as recent as 2 weeks ago, I lost two more people. And the amount of grief that one person can handle is, you know, they always say God will never give you anything that you can't handle. Well, I think he overestimated me. So because he gave me a lot to handle this year. However, though, it's how you, like, I have to go back to my mom because I have that mechanism. I have that ability to make people laugh and to also to give myself the opportunity to laugh. Of course, you need to cry when you need to cry. When you're one day talking to somebody, the next day they're in the ICU, the day after that they are no longer communicating on Facebook because they're on a ventilator, and then you find out a week later they've died. There's no way to compartmentalize that. There's no way to put that on the back burner. It's raw, and it throws you into a really difficult conundrum because you want to memorialize those people, but you have so many people. Now, I came to New York in the 80s, right at the heights of the AIDS crisis. So I would go to work as a bartender, and one bartender would be out, and then the next day they would be in the hospital, and then a few days later they'd be gone. So even though I liken it to that experience of the AIDS crisis, those were all my friends and gay men that I was surrounded by. Most of them. There were a few that weren't. But this is different. These are different demographics. One person was 43 and the father of a newborn who died in ICU of COVID. Another person was in her 60s and survived COVID and then had a stroke. Another person was in his 60s, very healthy, and caught COVID, but nobody in his house or his family caught it. He was the only one, and he died. So there was no rhyme or reason as to why these people all over the country, friends of mine, were being taken. And I had to, you know, I had to find a way to toughen myself up because I had to throw myself into art. And that was, like I said, the way I grieved for my mom was by writing my book and by immortalizing her and by my memories of her, because it made her, she was present. She was present again. But when so many people were dying, one right after another, my friend Rick, who I've known since the 80s, who was a piano player. And then all of a sudden there was a notice on Facebook that he was in the hospital. And then a week later he was gone. But we had my mother never had a funeral. I'm going to have a funeral for her in August because at the time that she died, there were refrigerator trucks outside of every funeral home. The crematoriums were backed up. They could only process 12 people a day. So people were dying at such an alarming rate. When I got sick, I also was turned away from the ER because I could breathe and because I could walk. And that scared me, but it also made me realize that I wasn't as sick as I thought I was, that people were far more ill than I was, and that I could get better. And as I walked past the makeshift morgue, I watched them put bodies in the truck. So I realized that this is not something that you will ever see again, and I never want to see again.
Did you also think that it could be me?
Yes, because every time I live on a main street in Queens, and the ambulances that would go by every 20 minutes for 24 hours a day for 3 months, I always wondered if that next siren was going to be mine.
Yeah.
But then there was a miracle that I, only thing I can say is it was a miracle, because my friend Phoenix, she knows me better than anybody else. And she called me and she said, I know your mom just died, but you don't seem like yourself. What's wrong? And I said, I have COVID. And she said, what's your mailing address? And I gave her my mailing address. The very next day, a package arrived on my doorstep, and it was herbal tinctures and remedies from a farm in upstate New York to boost your immune system. And I started those that very day. And within 3 days of having those herbs in my system, my fever went down to 99. My headaches went away. And then within a week, completely gone. And I felt better than I had ever felt. I still had follow-up issues, and I still had trouble breathing, but the fever and the headache was gone. And I don't know if it was a placebo, if it was just somebody caring, or if those herbs and remedies really worked. I feel like they really boost my immune system to fight it off. And that's why I feel like I really have, that helped me. And I'll always be grateful for her to reach out and send that to me. So I pay it forward. Whenever somebody that was a friend of mine that posted on Facebook, I have COVID, I private message them, what's your mailing address? And I sent them the same herbs that she sent me. And every single one of them since has recovered. And I always feel like grief comes and goes in waves. And it's how you handle the tide. Sometimes it's a big tide. Sometimes it's a really big wave. Sometimes it's a little gentle wave on your ankles. But it's how you stand against the tide and just stay strong that gives you, that elevates you. And it also helps you. There's some comfort in knowing that I survived it. I lived through it. And now I can share it with people, and I can help people who may have lost someone during this time, who may have lost their mom, who may have lost that their grandma, who may have been that crazy person. And if they read my cookbook and they want to try my recipes and they hear my stories, if they can relate and it makes them chuckle and think of their relative, then I've done my job. And that part of grief, I feel, is prevalent in the book. But I also felt like the book is meant to make people laugh and enjoy, and to create their own memories, and to create meals that were designed to make family and to make close-knit groups come together. Because that was all Italian cooking is. It's all family style. And so that's what I love about it. And that's what I want to always pass on to people, is that, yeah, you know, I had a rough go with it, but I survived it. And, you know, I came out a better person on the other side. I learned so much about myself. I learned how to write. I learned how to write intelligently. Hopefully but I also learned that laughter is so healing. And if you ever need to do something to make yourself feel better, look up on YouTube a stand-up comedy routine. I looked at all of the stand-up comedy routines from the 80s, Whoopi Goldberg, Billy Crystal, Robin Williams, Eddie Murphy, George Carlin, Louis, what's his last name? Louis Anderson, Joan Rivers, just people that made me laugh, Phyllis Diller, people that made me laugh, Carol Burnett. And I just take those little nuggets of wisdom and making fun of situations that were going on in the world when they recorded those stand-up sets. And I laugh. And I encourage everybody to do the same thing, because we've all been through a lot. Maybe New York got hit a lot harder than most places. But in all of my time with this situation, I learned so much about myself, and I've become a better person about it. I've become a more compassionate person, and open and open-minded. And also, there's nothing like a good belly laugh from your mom saying something ridiculous. So I think that probably sums it up.
You know what? We're going to try to steal about 5 more minutes in addition to the 5 we have. You said a lot, and just really with everything that you've been through, I definitely salute you and I respect it. Mm-hmm. And just it's just really good to see someone living their dream and going after the things they want and becoming a a multi-hyphenated artist. Love it. And then to think about COVID and how it turned your world. Yeah, and you know, and you said something, one of my favorite words and quotes and thoughts is about paying it forward. You know, paying it forward is when random acts of kindness, you know, we just do it over and over and over. So what someone did to you, you continue to do to others. So, you know, I salute you for doing that. And just to think about, you said losing your mom, your aunt, uncle, and 13 friends, like, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. That's a lot. I mean, I don't even think I've ever heard of that. And the last thing I want to say is I was looking on the news and just seeing people that was passing away in New York and how they were dumping bodies in some field. And it was horrible. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. So with all that you've been through, and the thing is, I know, and Anita, I know you know this all too well also, a lot of the time people will look at you, and you know they're saying, thank God I don't look like what I've been through. People have no idea what you have been through. So tell us, we have about 6 more minutes, but tell us, Bobby, what's next for you? Like, you have so much going on. You've been through so much. And Anita, if you want to squeeze the question in there, go ahead now. But I would love for you to share with everyone what's next for you and how people can reach you. But go ahead, Anita, with any questions that you can answer them all together.
I wanted to ask the same thing. I wonder what's next for you now.
Well, there's my cookbook, which is being published this summer. It is called Escape to Ravioli Mountain, A Memoir in Food. And it's easy to find me on Instagram, Escape to Ravioli Mountain. And email me, escapetoraviolimountain@gmail.com. Join my mailing list, and I'll tell you about the book. I'll send you recipes and tease little stories until the book is published. Also, I'm working on a new musical coming to New York, and it is a fantastic one. It is called Super You. It is a coming-of-age story about a young woman who is a comic book illustrator, and she's in a horrible relationship that doesn't suit her. But she draws comic book heroes, and those comic book heroes come to life, and they change her and help her love herself. It's called Super You, and it's coming to New York, hopefully on Broadway this year when the theaters come back. So there's that. Also, you can find me on Instagram at Flying Bobby. That's my Instagram tag. And then going back to what you were saying before, yes, there was a lot of loss. And yes, I have lived I've lived more lives than I care to admit, but it's made me a stronger person. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and it is so true. But yes, those are the two new things. As soon as theater comes back, Super You will be hopefully on Broadway. It's a great rock musical, superyoumusical.com. You can also find ways to hear some of the music on Spotify and on SoundCloud. We also have a very active Instagram page at Super You Musical. And so I'll be designing some of the flying for the superheroes. There are really, you know, some exciting things in the horizon. I just want everybody to be safe. I want everybody to be healthy again. I want everybody not to be scared again. And I want life to come back. I want my city back. And I want all of my friends to be able to take their mask off and give me a hug.
And we have to invite you to come back. We only have 20 seconds left. Bobby, thank you so much for joining us. This is Tawanda and Anita with Take 411. Today you heard it from Bobby. And I have seen him. He is the multi-talented, multi-hyphenated artist. We'll definitely post his information to connect with him, find out about the book.
Thank you.
Bobby, hopefully you'll join us again soon. And we definitely appreciate you sharing everything.
It was so much fun.
Absolutely. Well, we definitely look forward to getting you on the schedule. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Please follow him, purchase the book, pre-order it. And again, take 411 is here to share information and showcase stories and information. Until the next time, Bobby, take care.
Good night.
Hey, Anita.
Uh-huh.
Hold on one second. Anita?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi. Yeah, so basically, whatever we talk about now, I'll delete it. Like on the podcast or on the blog talk show, I can do it for 2 hours if I run it together. So basically, what we do is send it to someone to cut it. So the first 45 minutes with him, they'll separate that from your young lady that's dialing in about 5 minutes. But whatever we talk about now, I make sure it's trash, and it's not.
Yeah.
So you know, so it won't be for the. It's not for the public. But yeah, he was interesting, but I knew he wasn't gonna get a. I really wanted to have a conversation, and the call
mm-hmm.
is really about grief, and
yeah,
talk more about the trapeze. He emailed now, girl. Girl,
yeah,
he emailed it right now.
Yeah, he has a lot to say.
And look, he could have took it all 2 hours, really.
Yeah, he didn't need us on there at all.
He really didn't, did he?
No.
He didn't need us at all, girl. And now he wanna know where to record that. I have somebody cut it up, but oh my gosh. Well, how your day been though? Now don't talk about your boyfriend on here now.
My cousin came to visit today from Indianapolis, and so we enjoyed the morning with him.
When was the last time you saw your cousin?
Yeah, he's a cousin from Indianapolis, and
when was the last time you saw your cousin?
Last summer.
Okay, so that was a safe visit.
So it hasn't been really long, but it's nice, and we had a good visit, and he's pretty funny. And then
was it a special occasion?
No, he just took some days off from work and just taking a little vacation. A therapy appointment after that. And so I was just getting in the door when you called, and says my therapy appointment for my legs. And what's her name? Williams. She's a talk show. Wendy Williams, is it her name?
Wendy Williams?
Wendy, you know, she has a talk show.
I know Wendy Williams.
She had the same thing in her legs.
Oh, wow. What is it?
It's a lymphedema. And so sometimes on her show.
Yeah.
She has the same thing I do. That's the same thing in my legs. And so if it can be treated with therapy, and I'm doing it, and it's making a big difference for me.
Okay, so you had a busy day then.
Yeah, it's a real busy day.
So what's your weekend plan?
I have no plan for the weekend. It just will come as it comes.
Are you serious? No hot date?
No. That's okay. I don't need anything. It's way too much.
No hot date to Iowa? Huh?
No.
Oh my God.
So we have to start looking for a place. We have to look for a place to live, you know, the next couple of weeks.
Before the summer's over?
Yeah, because I made arrangements with my brother to stay here till May.
Now let me ask you. Are you willing to move far for your mom again?
To do what?
Are you willing to move far from your mom again?
Yeah, it's fine. She's doing good. She's doing good again.
What does she have to say about that? She doesn't want to see you on a regular basis?
She revived again. You know, we thought she was about gone, and then she pulled back through, and she's doing good again. So it's not that I can come visit anytime too. So it'll be fine. The grandkids are more important, really.
Aww.
Yeah, so. But I can come back and visit anytime I want, so.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Because right now, how far away is she from you right now?
She's about 20 minutes.
Ah, man, you don't go over there every day?
No, well, I've been traveling, then I have to quarantine myself from it, too. So I go once a week when I'm not haven't just traveled. We have to be real careful of her health, you know. So
Who stays there with her, Anita?
She my one sister stays during the week, and then she has nurses that come in. She has caretakers that come in during the day, so she has one in the morning and one in the evening. And then the rest of the time she's by herself. So she she does fairly well yet, but, you know, she, it's easy for her to fall and things. And she's diabetic, so she has to give herself a shot. And, you know, it's just a lot of issues when you're 92.
Yeah, of course. And bless her heart. Oh, my gosh. That's, like, so amazing.
But she always has something to look forward to every day, some project that she has to do and keep on.
Really? She stays busy like that?
Yeah, it's what keeps her mind alive and stuff. She works on genealogy and writing stories about family and stuff, and she's organizing.
Really?
Pictures. She's always doing
stuff. Oh, she's busy.
Yeah. At Christmas time, she made everybody a present. And
are you serious?
Yeah. So
I love it, love it, love it, love it. Yeah,
it's just good. It's good for her, and she likes the ladies coming in. They're actually like girlfriends for her.
All the weekend.
They come all through all every day. They come every day. My sisters
so
are there at night.
Like. So with your sisters, right, now, do they demand that you come and stay sometimes too, or are they okay with how that's working?
If she's not doing well and then and my other sister can't be there, then I'll go. But there's
but
you
you're
know,
busy.
There's
you don't know be to, you don't know be in town.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's six kids to share the
oh.
share it. And,
how many girls is it?
It's three girls and two boys, so.
Okay.
Other than me, there's all together six of us.
Are you the oldest or the baby or what?
I am the oldest one.
All right, hold on, Anita. I think this is Candy. Hold on. I'm scared. Hold on. Hello,
are you
Candy?
Are you on this one?
Yes. Yes. This is she.
Hey, Candy. How
I'm
you doing?
Here. I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Anita, this is Candy. Candy, Anita.
Hi, Candy.
Hello.
Basically, what I was telling Anita was we were just doing an interview with someone, and I have to break the segments up, so I'm going to play some music for intermission after we kind of chat with you. I sent you the questions. Are you good to go? You feeling good? Are you nervous? Are you a pro at this?
No, I'm not a pro at it, but I sent the questions back. Did you not receive them? But I can basically tell you my story in the story and the answer the questions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I definitely didn't need you to answer them for me. I just wanted you to know what I was going to ask. But no, we're just going to have a regular dialogue with you.
Okay.
The show's about 35, 45 minutes, and we just kind of want you to share whatever you're comfortable with from that, and we'll just kind of go from there. Is that cool?
That sounds perfect.
Anita, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, so what I'm going to do is play some music to kind of break up, because Anita and I were sitting. Well, let's hold on a second. It said 90 seconds. I don't know why it's doing that. All right, so hold on one second. Hopefully nothing crazy is going on. Let's see. We find the music.
Thank you.
by building Rome. All right, all right, all right. Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Tawanda. And today on Clutch by RGAA, powered by Building Rome, I'm joined with the lovely Anita. Anita, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
All right, all right. And we're super excited for our interview. And I just actually logged back into the email, and I see what you emailed, Candy. And I couldn't get past, I live in Hawaii, cause, and now I'm about to fall out because Hawaii is definitely some place that I want to get to. And then the island of, well, I can't even pronounce it, but I used to love the show Hawaii Five-O, and I used to love, like, trying to find out everything about the island. So welcome to our podcast. This podcast with is a podcast for women. And, you know, we want to share with women. It's about empowerment, self-help, personal development, and so many different things. And we're so excited to have you on our show today. And we just want to have a conversation with you. Is that okay?
That would be perfect. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. And thank you so much for joining us, because right now in Hawaii, you were telling me about the time zone early, and I'm like, I don't even know what that means. So what time is it where you are?
It is 2 p.m.
2 p.m. Hawaii time.
Yes. We are, okay. I mean, from the mainland, we are 6 hours. We're currently 6 hours from East Coast time. Central's 5, Mountains 4, and Pacific 3.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got all that down packed. So now... All right. Candy, first, tell us a little bit about, we know where you live in the great state of Hawaii, but tell us a little about who you are and whatever else you want to share with us.
Where do I begin? I've had quite the interesting story, or at least so I've been told. I'm a former military spouse. My husband's retired. I have had experiences growing up that I thought were pretty fortunate. I was fairly blessed, you know, for the most part. But I also, through a personal transformational journey of mine, I discovered I had a lot of trauma and didn't really fully acknowledge it. And unfortunately, that trauma affected my life going forward. But I have a blessed life, and I'm very thankful for it, because I have managed to turn it around, even with everything that I have encountered going, you know, that I discovered and encountered growing up. Where would you like me to begin? It's quite the story, I guess.
Well, no, and that definitely says a lot. I'm sorry, Anita, were you hearing me say something?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Now, the first question is, I'm back on Hawaii again. So you're on the island of Ahu?
Oahu. Where Honolulu, where they filmed Hawaii Five-O, that's where I live.
Oh, my gosh. I'm in love. Okay, all right. All right, so, yeah, so, I asked you a couple of things in the email, and you sent so many different things already that was just really incredible. So, let your heart lead you. You tell us. We want to hear more about who you are, what your story is. We want women to hear it, because as I was just saying a little while ago, a lot of times people look at people and say, hey, she's never been through anything. And I know we used to saying, I thank God that I don't look like what I've been through. So and I know you definitely have traveled and done a lot of different things, and you've been through some things as well. So if you don't mind, just kind of share how we met and what you wanted to come on the show and talk about today.
Okay. Well, I was thankful enough to find you on Facebook in the podcast group, and you were talking about grief, you know, how people have had different experiences that have, like grief or other experiences, and how they've managed to overcome them or deal with them, and what the, you know, how they've affected their lives. Let's see. I live in Hawaii. I live on the island of Oahu, where Honolulu, Pearl Harbor, all that is. It's the, as far as the island chain goes, it's the more crowded of the islands. Most people refer to Oahu as the New York City of the island chains because we are the more crowded one. But it is beautiful. It's still paradise. It's still very nice, you know, and I'm very blessed. Let's see. I've had a plethora of different experiences. Growing up, I got to travel a lot. My father was an electrical engineer. My mom worked for various companies. And I had the fortunate experience of traveling to several different countries and living in different countries. I've lived in 7 different ones through my childhood and even into my adulthood. And I've traveled to over 40 of them. So I've had a wide berth of experiences of different places, locations, cultures, you name it. I've seen a lot. And so when I was growing up, I always thought, you know, most people could only dream about things like that. I've seen things that are, you know, no longer, I've been in countries that are no longer communist, but at the time they were communist countries. Let's see. I guess I will kind of go with where my passion is. And the reason I reached out to you is to kind of, I wanted to help, my passion is to help women. I've always had
a passion to help women. Okay.
I've always had a passion to help people, but women are my true passion. And I'll explain why. When I was growing up, when I was about 3, I had the unfortunate experience of being an only child in a household where my parents did not communicate really well. They had no communication, to be exact. And my mother did not feel like she had or she could talk to other adults about her concerns. Me being an only child, I got a lot of an earful a lot of times. I became a little confidant for my mom at an early age of 3. I took on a responsibility that I had no wherewithal to understand. And unfortunately kind of lost a part of my childhood, at least the fun part, you know, because I didn't know that those were, you know, the adult problems that my mom was sharing with me wasn't mine to deal with. She was just trying to vent. Well, I tried to figure them out. And 3-year-olds don't have that ability. So that affected my life. Little did I know how it was going to affect my life. Going forward, it really did have an impact on my life. And it affected how I interacted with people. It affected my own relationship with my mother and my father. And I always knew something wasn't right, but I just didn't know to what degree. You know, there was almost like it was a blind spot for me. So fast forward, I, you know, went to college, then got married a man that was, went into the military. I became a military spouse. Traveled around the world and around the country with him. Had 2 kids. My youngest is 25 and my oldest is 27. And all the while, I had all this pain that was deep inside of me that I had through the course of time, stuffing. And, you know, the laws of physics, what goes down must come up. Well, I had become pretty adept at stuffing because I didn't know how to talk about my problems, and I didn't know that some of the things I was, you know, taking on, I didn't need to take on. So I was kind of like a ticking time bomb. I was very emotional as a teenager, because I continued to watch my parents not communicate, and my mom still continued to share her problems with me, which further compounded all the other troubles that she had laid on me. So this affected my teenage years, affected my adult life, and all the while, you know, I was hurting inside, and I was trying really, really hard to figure out what my existence was. When I was 5, I had an episode where I almost drowned. I didn't know how to swim. We had lived in Greece, and then my parents had tried to teach me or tried to have me learn how to swim in the ocean, but I didn't like the water because of the salt and the fact that I couldn't see beneath me. So I would go home and practice. And when I practiced it in the bathtub, I was fine. But when I had to replicate it in the ocean, I wouldn't do it. So they literally flunked me out. And my grandmother had this pond at her ranch. And I used to go over and look over into the ocean, into the pond, because there were fish in it. And it was about 15 feet deep. And it was kind of murky because it was a pond. And I fell in. And all I can say was it had to have been by the grace of God, that angels or my guides or whoever you want to view it as, someone was holding me up. Because when I was able to get above, I was bobbing up and down and I was having troubles, and I was able to get above long enough to scream. And my mom and my grandmother came out, and my mom saw me. I was holding on to a very small blade of grass, and the blade of grass was not strong enough for my body weight. I wasn't a very big little girl, but what I was holding on to wasn't enough for me. Something else was helping me. And I did learn how to swim, because my mom's like, you are going to learn how to swim. We're not going to have this problem again. But I digress. I went backwards. Sorry. All along, after that incident, I used to question, why was I here? You know, evidently I was here for a purpose, because God didn't let me die. So when I was going through all my struggles and the pain I was feeling, I was always going, well, why am I still here? What's my purpose, you know? And I didn't know, I didn't get the answers. I just kind of wandered through life, bearing pain, not dealing with stuff. You know, anything that I experienced, I just stuffed. I didn't deal with it. And
wow.
I was not in a good state of mind. I mean, I was functioning. If you saw me, you wouldn't know how much pain I was in. But deep down inside, I was like a brewing volcano, you know? It brews underneath, and it's got a bad undercurrent, but it's just waiting.
And nobody really knows.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go
ahead,
Anita.
Were you able to share with your husband?
No, not really, because I hadn't really learned to talk to anybody. I journaled a lot, and I would pray a lot and cry out to God a lot, but not really with my husband, because unfortunately my ex, he's now my ex-husband, but my husband at the time was an alcoholic. So that's further fed into a bad situation and relationship problems that we had. So I dealt with him, you know, I dealt with his challenges, and then I just kind of suppressed my own. And
let me reiterate
a
couple things. Let me say a couple things you mentioned, Candy. And again, a lot of times in life, we just never know where people are, what people have been through. And I appreciate what you had written prior to our show today, because I just want to share a couple of those different things so we can definitely get you to elaborate on a little bit of it, because you just never know. And what you said here is, you said, I lost both of my parents within 18 months of each other, and I had a business fail and a relationship problem. I developed health issues and lost my four-month-old. It was the last straw. I was hurting even more and struggling to contain the pain now. I fell into a pit of depression and found myself crying out to God to let me go. I wanted so much for this pain to cease and to leave this life. My life was at the bottom, and I could no longer deny the pain nor shove it down. While I was crying out and asking for my life to end, I heard in my ears, no, you have more work to do. When I listened to this voice, I reacted with anger. I had so much pain, and I was being told I could not end my life. At the same time, I had this nudging that kept me prompting me to acknowledge that I had to change. I felt a yearning deep inside that was wanting to find a solution to heal the embedded pain deep inside of me. I was at the bottom and realized the only direction I could go was up, and I had to find a solution to change my life. And I'm not going to read the rest, but I want to go back to the top. You said, I lost both of my parents within 18 months of each other. Business fail, relationship problems, health problems, and loss of 4 months old. And this is what you wrote like less than an hour or so ago. Talk to us a little bit about these feelings, especially wanting to give up, like saying, hey, I want to leave here. I don't want to be here anymore. Because you're still here, Candy.
Yes, I'm still here. I am. And I'm glad I'm still here, because I do have more stuff
I'm glad
to do.
You're still, that's right. That's fine.
My biggest challenge was, yes, I lost my father first, and then my mother. She had cancer, and she ended up going 18 months later. And plus, you know, I lost my stepfather too in between that. So it was quite the journey. There was a time after I, you know, lost my parents, you know, I cried, but I didn't grieve. I didn't allow myself to truly grieve their loss. After my four-month-old passed away, I went to work. I don't remember much of that day, but I went to work. It was a blur. It really was. And I stuffed it. I had become very adept at stuffing feelings and not, you know, I'd start to cry and then I'd shut it off, like, you know, like kind of like you're turning off a valve, and it's like, nope, sorry. Can't feel that. Don't want to. And, you know, that was affecting a lot of things. I really truly believe it affected my marriage, affected my relationships. It affected everything, my interactions with everything around me, because I had never dealt with the grief that my body was saying you so desperately need to experience. You know, there are five stages of grief that we all have to go through, and everybody's grief process is different. Some go through it quicker. Some go through it. It takes longer. It can take years. And some just kind of don't, you know, they get kind of stuck. Well, for a period of time, I got stuck because there was a part of me that just didn't want to experience that pain. I had to confront some stuff within me, and dealing with the grief, it was eye-opening. And I remember that day like it was yesterday. I was laying in bed. I had just gotten a major diagnosis, and it was scary because my life felt like it was just completely spiraling out of control, and I didn't know which way was up. I just knew that I just wanted the pain to end because it felt like the pain was coming from all directions. And I remember crying out, going, God, just let me go home. Just take me. But I couldn't. There was something stopping me from fully taking that next step. And I was like, you know, and then when I would do it again, and I cried out again. I'm like, I just want it to end. I don't want to feel this anymore. I don't want to feel this pain anymore. And that's when I heard, you know, in my head, no, you still have more to do. I was like, I said some colorful expletives, and I'm like, God, that's not fair. You know, I got angry, and I'm like, you can't keep me here. I was just having a one-sided argument with God. I was like, why are you keeping me here? This doesn't seem fair, you know? Take me home, you know, let me go. And nothing, I was like, so I just cried. At that point, I was just crying, and I was like just bawling. And every time I turned around, I seemed like I ran tears. Like, but I guess it was in my own way, that was the grief coming out of me that I'd never dealt with. And I'd never allowed my body to really feel. Because when you don't feel grief and you don't experience it in the ways that you're supposed to, it gets stuck. And we're not meant to, as women and as people, we're not meant to just stuff stuff. We're meant to feel it. And a lot of us don't want to feel the negative things, the bad things, the things that make us uneasy. But in order to heal, and part of that journey is we have to sit with it. We have to allow those emotions to come and be around us and sit with us for however long they need to be there until we can say, okay, I've sufficiently said goodbye.
That's definitely a lot. As people say, it's a hard pill to swallow. And just thinking about what you wrote, I mean, just when we go through things, I know we handle things differently. And I know you also mentioned you were married, so maybe even during the relationship, sometimes you know how a person wants to help you or save you, and then that burden just becomes so much to bear. And as I was reading here, you said when you were talking about the different things you were going through, what Candy also wrote to those that's listened to our show, she said, when I was crying out and asking for my life to end, I heard in my ears, no, you have more work to do. Think about that. Sometimes we want to give up, but it's not time. And, you know, whether you believe in a higher power, whether you believe in God, sometimes it's just not time. And, you know, one of the movies that I really love, I'm not sure if you guys remember a show called Facing the Giant. You guys remember that movie?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah.
It's a very good movie.
It's a powerful movie. It's a powerful movie because a lot of times in life we want to quit, but it's not time. You probably felt like, and I'm not a therapist or a psychiatrist. I'm a person, too, that's been through some stuff. So you probably felt like, I don't have any more to give. I got to leave. I mean, is that how you felt, Candy? Like, I'm at the end of my rope. I can't be hurt no more. I don't know what else to do. It's just easier for me to leave here. Is that how you felt?
I did. I had even, you know, pursued. I have a bachelor's in psychology, two masters, a master's in counseling, you know, as a therapist. And I was pursuing my doctorate and life just hit me. And that's what, and I had to take a kind of a hiatus because I had to heal myself first. You can't help people if you don't heal yourself, you know?
So
and yeah, I did. Yeah, I felt like I was hanging by the, you know, a string just going, let me go. I kept trying to cut the string and it was like the string wasn't there to cut. I was like, oh, wow. You've got to be kidding me.
So what did you do?
You know,
what did you do to heal yourself?
I'm sorry?
What did you
do
to heal yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I started I started looking into energy healing. I also did emotional freedom technique, which is basically tapping. Tapping helps calm the nervous system, you know, that fight or flight that we experience mm-hmm. when there's stress or even a perceived stress. If you do tapping and you voice what you're feeling, it helps calm down the nervous system. It calms down that fight or flight so that you can at least go forward with a clearer thought. I started putting into use, into practice, some of the techniques that I had learned through my education. And I always knew that, you know, everything begins with a thought. Even MDs these days are recognizing that a lot begins in our mind.
Yeah.
And so I started implementing, looking at what was I thinking? What was I telling myself? Because, Tony Robbins talks about a triad. It begins with your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions. So your actions are when you're feeling like in a slump, get up and move. Physically move, you know, jump up and down, go for a run, because those are usually, it'll kick in the serotonin, the dopamine, the GABA, all those transmitters, the neurotransmitters that help us produce the feel-good feelings and everything that we need. Oftentimes when we have sustained stress, we deplete those, the GABA and the dopamine and the serotonin. But there are simple ways that you can increase those without being on medication. I'm not saying if you're on medication that you shouldn't be. I've been on medication. It did help me. But I do it now more with when I start to feel a slump. I'll get up and jump around for 2 minutes or run in place or go for a run, you know. And I come back and I usually feel 1,000 times better.
Mm-hmm.
Or even I sing.
A very natural way to do it, too. Healthy.
I'll sing in private. I don't care. I'll sing in the car.
Uh-huh.
But the other part that really made a difference for me was looking at what I was thinking and what I was telling myself. Because when we can't control how life happens. Life happens. We have no control over life's events. However, and we don't even really have control over the outcome. The only thing that we can control is how we choose to respond to the event.
Yeah.
So if we take responsibility and choose to respond a certain way, meaning in a positive way, we're going to get a better outcome than we would if we respond in a negative way. So I started doing some internal looks at what the heck was I telling myself, you know? And a lot of my thoughts, unfortunately, were negative because that was what my mother had conditioned me with. And that's what I was keeping around me was just, you know, events that were, it was kind of like that self-fulfilling prophecy, you know? If you focus on something too long, you eventually get it.
Yeah, that self-talk is very powerful, what you mm-hmm. tell yourself.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, you mentioned the tapping, but you mentioned something before that, and I didn't quite, it's energy, what was it?
Energy healing. It's just
That
is, I took a course that helped me to we're all made of energy. I mean, mm-hmm. whether we acknowledge it or not, or you believe it or not, it's irrelevant. But we all are made of energy. Humans are made of more dense energy, just like a table's made of dense energy, but it's more dense. I focused on clearing some of the negative energy around me. You know, I would say affirmations, and I would say things that would help remove some of that energy and do clearings and, you know, for myself, that helped me to look at and get to the root cause of all that was plaguing me and challenging me.
So you're saying that there were negative things around you that you needed to clear out so that you could feel better.
Sticks around if we don't clear it out. You know, I mean, listening to good, calm music helps clear energy. Being cognizant of what you're watching. You know, if you watch a bunch of shows that are violent, that feeds that negative energy versus watching shows like Hallmark, you know, where they're lovey-dovey and, yeah, they're predictable, as my husband calls them, but, you know, they have a good ending.
They do, always.
And
my mom swears by Hallmark.
I love Hallmark. I mean, you know, most of the time I'll just usually listen to music, but if I, you know, want something and I'm watching TV, I'll put on a Hallmark a show on Hallmark. They're, for the most part, their themes are really, they're not
mushy and lovable. And I love Hallmark too, especially during the holidays, like after Halloween and we're prepping for Thanksgiving and family and love. I'm like, oh, let me get me some Hallmark. But what I want to say before you guys run off, I wanted to finish reading this thing that Candy wrote because it's powerful. You said, and I don't think you mentioned this yet, and this is very, very important. I remember hearing my mother on her deathbed having a bunch of regrets. She regretted not following her dreams and allowing her fears to get in the way of her truly living. I realized I did not want to come to the end of my life and have all those regrets on what I did or didn't do. I was getting ready to have a significant birthday, and I wanted to find a way to change my life and even someone else's life before too much time has passed. I started my journey of finding how to soothe my inner ache. Let me read this last paragraph. I found a program that helped me to see all the negative energy that I created and which I was carrying with me everywhere I went. I learned to clear energy, and I began to understand that we always are making choices, and I had to make the choice to improve my life or stay the same. I learned that I need to take responsibility for all the experiences in my life, both the good and the bad. I learned from a mentor that I need to take a deep dive into my embedded pain to heal. My mentor helped me realize I had a pattern of self-defeating habits of blaming, complaining, and listening to my inner critic. I learned to give myself a tiny bit of compassion. With help, I began to realize I was making choices, and if I wanted a different outcome, I needed to change my response to the events occurring in and around me, which is what you just said, but I needed to read that because it's so significant. Can you share a little bit about your mom and on her deathbed? Did she literally talk to you about regrets?
Yeah, she did, because my mom was, she had regrets, a lot of regrets. She, you know, regretted what she did to me. She regretted that she didn't pursue opportunities or didn't show me things. And, you know, my mom left this world by choice. She had cancer and it had metastasized, and she was had her kidney removed and she was on dialysis, and my mom was tired of living with the pain, and so her doctor said her best course of action was to remove herself. When I was visiting with her before she left this world, and spending time with her, she's like, I'm so sorry, you know, I wish I would have done things differently. And, you know, I was getting ready to have a significant birthday, and I thought to myself, however many years I'm here on this earth, I don't want to reach the end of my life and go, I should have, could have, would have. I had done that enough in my life, and I didn't want to do it anymore. And I watched my mom become this, what she'd always been, a, you know, kind of a forceful nature person in my life. And at the end, she became this fragile, dying woman who had so much regret about what she didn't do and what she did do. And I thought, I don't want to do that. I don't. And it kind of stuck with me at that moment.
So, what did you do for your special birthday?
Well, COVID affected things, but
yeah, like you were saying.
It's not as what I had hoped to have, but we still had a nice birthday. I celebrated with neighbors. And you know, my husband made me dinner and we had a nice barbecue with friends, and it wasn't exactly how I had envisioned spending it, but it is what it was, you know. I mean, we were limited.
There's always next year.
Yes. It's always just another, it's just a day in a birthday. We can celebrate however we want. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, when I saw my mom, that was really a turning point for me, because I realized that if I didn't turn things around, and I didn't make that conscious effort to see things from a different perspective, I was going to come to the end of my life and be just like my mother. And there were many a times that I really pushed back against what she wanted me to do. And this kind of set into it. It was like, I don't want to go down that road like she did. So I said, okay. And I had this nudging inside of me that said, you need to find something that's going to help you. And so I started scouring and talking to people that I knew. And I came across some, you know, by the grace of God, things, opportunities and webinars came into my existence that I was like, oh, I don't know where that came from, but I was like, okay. So I followed that, you know, and discovered things and started my healing and my journey to healing. I'm still in the process of healing. I mean, you know, we all are, as long as we're in this earthly body. But I can tell you this, I am a lot farther along than I was a week ago, a year ago. And yeah, I still have life happen. I mean, none of us are immune to that. But now when life happens, I just like, okay, we're going to breathe through it. If it's something personal that happens, you know, we'll breathe through it. I feel emotion and I cry and I really do grieve if I encounter something that's not pleasant or it affects me and it hits me. But I'm like, okay, you gotta feel this and you gotta sit with it. And so I'm like, okay, whatever this anger, you know, negative emotion is that's coming, I'm just like, okay, come sit with me. Show me what you want me to see about this. Because as I learned, life doesn't happen to us. Life happens for us so that we can learn. It's just all about how we choose to see it. If we choose to see it as something happening to us, then we're always going to be in that role of victim, if that makes sense. It's more like, oh, this is happening to me. I'm in the victim role. But if we see it as life happening for us, then we have a more proactive role in that. And we can make a difference. And we can change things.
That makes sense. And one thing I want to definitely say, when you were talking about your mom and living with regrets, I remember one of my old success mentors said, probably about 12, 13 years ago, we were at a convention for a business we were in at the time in Vegas. And it was so powerful. And she sent me a note and she said, don't you dare make the graveyard richer. And I said, the graveyard? Man, we had a powerful event. You're talking about the graveyard? And she said, what I mean is most people die with their dreams and goals in their head. They never try to do it or live. And she said, I don't want you to do that. And I said, I promise you I won't. And that's exactly what I thought about when I read, you know, your mom had these regrets. But one thing that was a blessing is it was an example for you to you know what, Mama? I'm not going to be like that. Thank you. She gave you the inspiration to want more, and that's powerful.
Thank you. Well, I mean, the other option was I just, you know, keep going down the path I was going, which was leading me to things I really didn't desire in my life. And I can't say, even my husband says, I have changed. Yeah, I'm still a female. I get moody. I still have experiences where I'm like, ew. But I'm a lot more aware of what I'm thinking about. Just like, for example, last night or this morning, I woke up and I had to go to the bathroom, but I was like mad at my husband. And for a moment there, I was like, what are you telling yourself? You have a good husband. What are you thinking? And for an instant, I had a thought that said, it was about something he didn't do, and I took what he didn't do as he wasn't taking care of me. And I thought, holy smokes, yes, he does take care of me. It was just this one event, you know. He's a very good husband, but I had allowed this subconscious thought to come in, and it was feeding into, and it was fueling an emotion that my husband was just being a jerk. But he's not, you know, he wasn't. It was just my thoughts. And I thought, oh. So when I woke up this morning, I gave him a big hug and I said, I'm so grateful for you. I'm thankful you take care of me. He goes, yes, I always will. If we don't pay attention to what we're telling ourselves with our thoughts, we'll go down holes we don't really want to go down.
Mhm. That's true. Candy, let me ask you, we only have about 12 minutes left, and I have no idea what happened to the time. You talked about something about energy. Can you elaborate a little more about clear energy, how you use energy, please?
How I use energy? When I clear energy, I guess it's a gifting of mine. I see energy around us. Or I can see energy around people. So, and I have some friends that, you know, when I'm really kind of stuck, they can see those blind spots. But I can see if someone's, you know, their auras, their color of their auras, because we all have them. And depending on what's plaguing somebody, it can affect the color of our aura. I do techniques by clearings to help refresh that energy so that we start off with good energy versus energy that's wonky or not so good.
You know, some things I think is really, maybe you can explain this to me, because like, I don't know a whole lot about energy, but I'm all about energy. I've sometimes had someone, they'll come to me. I'm all about positivity. I don't care if it's a bad day or not. I'm still going to be positive, grateful, all of the above, right? I know my energy is good, always is. When someone comes to me with a negative energy, negative spirit, or whatever you want to call it, I get sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I immediately want to get away from them. Can you explain that?
Because, you know the... You've heard the term like attracts like, right? It's kind of like a battery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you put a battery and you've got the polar opposite end connecting to, you have a positive and you put a negative to it, they're going to repel each other. So energy does that. When you are surrounded by people, you're going to attract people. If you're positive and you have positive energy, that's what you're sending out. That's what you're going to attract. So when someone comes into your energy field that's the opposite, you're going to feel it because that's not what you're sending out. If you find yourself comfortable around people like that, that means, first of all, look at what energy are you sending out? You know, what's going on in your sphere that is bringing these people in? Because we attract like energy. So if we're positive, we're going to draw in positive people and positive events. But if we're have some energy that's kind of like wonky, and we might pull in something that's a little wonky. But if it's not your normal energy, you're going to push it again. You're going to push against it, and it's going to go, ooh, you're going to see it because that's not your normal energy. Just think of a battery, you know. You put the battery in the wrong way, it's not going to work.
Exactly. And that's not a work for me, that negativity, negative energy.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you, this is a question that is not what I asked earlier when I was asking you questions. And really, I hate to spring a question on people. Well, that's not true. I actually love springing questions on people. But this is not going to hurt. With everything, and you live in Hawaii, can you send me some pineapples, please?
Can I send you some pineapples? Sure, I can send you some pineapples.
Yeah, like pick them from. Okay, cool. I cash app you.
Well, I don't know about picking them, but I mean, I can go to the Dole pineapple plantation and pick some up for you and send some. Yes.
Oh yeah, I want some pineapple. But with everything that you've been through, so, I mean, so many good, so many not good things. If you were to write a book about your life, you probably already are writing one. What would you call it?
What would I call it? I would call it Hope is as Narrow as a Blade of Grass.
Repeat that again.
Hope is a Narrow Blade of Grass.
Yeah, that's awesome because of your story in the pond.
I knew you were going to like that, Anita. I knew that's her thing. She's a retired
like
educator. I knew you were going to like that.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes what we're hoping for and what we need is very thin, and we don't always hold, you know, we don't always see it. But it's there. It's just you gotta look for it, and you gotta grasp for it.
That's powerful.
I hope that helps.
That's powerful. No, they definitely – listen, you're awesome, and we have to stay in touch because not just because you're a gourmet cook, not just because I'm obsessed with Hawaii, not just because you traveled over 40 countries and lived in 7, I'm really going to be – I'm digging all that. I need to see all your Instagram pictures, pictures of all these countries. I got a lot to learn from you, Candy, so we have to definitely
– Unfortunately, a lot of my pictures are on – Polaroid.
What? What do you mean?
Well, when I was traveling to these countries, we didn't have cell phones. So.
Candy, don't depress me, please.
I'm sorry. Send you the pictures. I can scan them. I do have the pictures. I can just,
listen,
you know, they're
go into your pharmacy,
pictures.
Right? Pharmacies will hook you up. They have photo books and everything because you're telling a lot of life stories. There was one guy, Anita and I was talking to, and he was saying that, I said, oh, you got to live a long time. You do a lot of things. And he said, well, I've lived a couple of lifetimes. I'm 50, I'm 50. So you have a lot of different things you've done too. It's like you have to live a couple of different lifetimes to do it. But on a serious note, because we only have like 5 minutes, talk to us in reference to anyone that's listening that have been through a glimpse of what you've been through, losing a parent, losing a child, the depression, thoughts of ending your life. Like, we know there's hope. So talk to us a little bit about some suggestions on if a person is down, is out, going through something. What are some thoughts and suggestions you want to leave us with?
Thing is, if you're dealing with grief or loss, don't run from it. Invite the grief in. I know that sounds kind of odd, but you just kind of have to say, okay, whatever the negative emotion is, grief, anger, whatever, you know what those emotions are. They're usually pretty powerfully negative. If you're experiencing a grief or a loss, allow that energy, allow that emotion to come and show you what you need to see from this event. Let it sit with you. Let it wash over you. Let it be with you. Feel the emotion, meaning you cry, you get angry and hit a pillow, whatever, it get out on people and, you know, things. But I've hit many a pillows when I was angry, going, I mean, I've kicked walls, and I'm not proud of that. That's a whole nother scenario. That was a part of the grief, the pain coming out of me. But I've hit pillows, you know, and used colorful expletives when I'm alone. But just feel it. Let those emotions come. Let them be. Don't run from them, because when you run from them, they come back, and they come back with a vengeance, because they're meant to be experienced. They're meant to be felt. And just know that if you're experiencing something, whether it's a traumatic event or grief, there is hope, but you also have to pay attention to what you're telling yourself. If you tell yourself, I can't do it, I'm not going to, you know, things like that, I can promise you, if you keep telling yourself that, it won't happen. It's that self-fulfilling prophecy. But if you tell yourself, you just have to reframe what you're telling yourself. It's not denying it. It's not, you can say, you can wake up and go, you know, I don't feel 100% today. I feel like I want to cry. I feel like I'm angry. And be okay with that. You're not lying to yourself. You're not denying it. You're just allowing it. You're reframing. You're not saying, well, this is awful, and this is, you know, I'm a piece of whatever, if you're mad at yourself, or I screwed up, I whatever we tell ourselves. We tell a lot of things that are not always positive. But when we just sit with that emotion and we look at what we're telling ourselves, there is hope, and you can turn things around. You just have to give yourself time, and you have to give yourself compassion. Because as women, we tend to be our harshest critic.
True. We're so critical of ourselves, and I'm not really sure why. But we only have a couple minutes, so I'm going to let you ask whatever you need to ask, because I don't want to be too greedy.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you being on tonight. I learned some things myself, and I really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for the time, ladies. I really appreciate it. And if you know anybody that needs help, share it. Share my story.
Absolutely. And I was going to ask, I don't want you to tell them how to contact you over in Hawaii, because I need the pineapples. But other than Hawaii stuff, I know I'm being selfish right now. I'm so sorry. But on a serious note, please leave us with how can someone contact you that they heard your story, they want to hear from you, they want to relate, they want to connect, they want to talk, they want to get some good synergy, energy. How can people get in touch with you?
On Facebook, it's under my name, Candy Campbell, which is K-A-N-D-I-E-E, Campbell like the soup, CAMPBELL.net. And then on Instagram, it's the same, Candy Campbell, but not .net, just Candy Campbell. And you can send me an email, and I will reach out. I'll even do a free clarity session.
Ah, love it, love it, love it. Just don't ask her for anything out of Hawaii. That's going to be up to me. That's going to be up to me. Thank you. Anita, you don't want to go to Hawaii anyway,
address,
right?
I'll send you some pineapples. I'll get you
some
stuff from Hawaii.
Yes, yes.
Email me your address,
it.
And I'll send you a little care package from Hawaii.
Can I just email myself to Hawaii, like, as soon as the COVID, you know what? What's going on? I don't know if we have time, but what's happening with COVID over there? How are things with you guys?
Well, compared to the mainland, we haven't got as many cases, but, you know, we're still our government's still questioning whether we're going to go backwards because our cases are on the rise. So they're trying to open stuff up, and we do have more tourists coming in, but it's not where we were, you know, pre-COVID. So you can come to Hawaii. You just have to have a negative COVID test within 72 hours of your final leg coming into Hawaii. But
well,
Hawaii
would
is open.
Would you have a get there and be quarantined and come back and be quarantined? I don't think I'm trying to do it all.
No,
quarantine
if you have
right
the, if you take the negative, if you take a COVID test within 72 hours of your final leg, meaning like if you're coming from New York and you go to Chicago, so from Chicago into Honolulu, whatever time that flight leaves, you take a test 72 hours from that departure time, and it's negative, you do not have to quarantine. You can come and do whatever you wish.
Okay. All right. You learn something new every day. All right. Awesome. All right, ladies, we are out of time. And guess what? The thing about time, we don't own it. I think it owns us. And we're out. This is Tawanda. This is Anita. We're Clutch by RGAA, powered by Building Rome. Today we have been blessed with Candy sharing her story. And we're going to be having her back on the show to share more information. We thank everyone for listening, for supporting the show. And the best is still yet to come. Until the next time, everyone.
Thank you for listening to yet another episode of Clutch, a podcast by Real Girlfriends Across America. Clutch onto us tight by following us on all of our social media platforms. This includes Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. Like, share, and follow us. Did you miss the episode? Don't worry. You can listen to us anywhere where podcasts are being played, including Apple Podcasts, Google, Anchor, Spotify, and Speaker. Don't forget to watch us on YouTube by searching for Real Girlfriends Across America and visit our website at www.realgirlfriends.org. And until next time, clutch on to your best friend and stay tuned.